Vim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayat. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 51, Chapter entitled The Deliverance of Muchukunda, text number
51
onwards. Nirjitya Vikchakram Abhuta Vigraho Varasana Sta Sama Raja Vanditaha Griheshu Maitunya Sukeshu Yoshitam Krida Mriga Purusha Isha Niyate Nirjitya Dikchakram Abhuta Vigraho Nirjitya Dikchakram Abhuta Vigraho Varasanasta Samaraja Vandita Varasanasta Samaraja Vandita Griheshu Maitunya Sukeshu Yoshitam Griheshu Maitunya Sukeshu Yoshitam
Griheshu Maitunya Sukeshu Yoshitam
Kridamriga Purusha Isha Niyate
Kridamriga Purusha Isha Niyate
Kridamriga Purusha Isha Niyate
Kridamriga Purusha Isha Niyate
Nirjitya Dikchakram Abhuta Vigraho
Nirjitya Dikchakram Abhuta Vigraho
Varasanasta Samaraja Vandita
Varasanasta Samaraja Vandita
Griheshu Maitunya Sukeshu Yoshitam
Griheshu Maitunya Sukeshu Yoshitam
Kridamriga Purusha Isha Niyate
Kridamriga Purusha Isha Niyate
Dik
of
directions.
Of directions.
Chakram.
Chakram.
The whole circle.
The whole circle.
Abhuta.
Abhuta.
Non-existent.
Non-existent.
Vigraha.
Vigraha.
Any conflict for whom?
Any conflict for whom?
Varasana.
Varasana.
On an exalted throne.
On an exalted throne.
Sta.
Sta.
Seated.
Seated.
Sama.
Sama.
Equal.
Equal.
Raja.
Raja.
By kings.
By kings.
Vandita.
Vandita.
Praised.
Praised.
Griheshu.
Griheshu.
In residences.
In residences.
Maitunya.
Maitunya.
Sex.
Sex.
Sukeshu.
Sukeshu.
Whose happiness?
Whose happiness?
Yoshitam.
Yoshitam.
Of women.
Of women.
Kridamrika.
Kridamrika.
A pet animal.
A pet animal.
Purusha.
Purusha.
The person.
The person.
Isha.
Isha.
O Lord.
O Lord.
Niyate.
Niyate.
Is led about.
Is led about.
Translation and purports by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. Having conquered the entire circle of directions and being thus free of conflict, a man sits on a splendid throne, receiving praise from leaders who were once his equals. But when he enters the women's chambers, where sex pleasure is found, he's led about like a pet animal, O Lord. Translation responsibly. Having conquered the entire circle of directions, and being thus free of conflict, a man sits on a splendid throne,
receiving praise from leaders,
who were once his equals. But when he enters the women's chambers, where sex pleasure is found, he is led about like a pet animal. O Lord. Text 52. A king who desires even greater power than he already has strictly performs his duties, carefully practicing austerity and foregoing sense enjoyment. But he whose urges are so rampant, thinking I am independent and supreme, cannot attain happiness. Text 53. When the material life of a wandering soul has ceased, O Achyutya, he may attain the association of your devotees. And when he associates with them, there awakens in him devotion unto you, who are the goal of the devotees and the Lord of all causes and their effects. Acharyas Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti agree on the following point. Although it is stated here that when material life ceases, one attains the association of devotees, in fact it is the association of the Lord's devotees that enables one to transcend material existence. Srila Jiva Goswami explains this apparent inversion of sequence by quoting the Kavya Prakash 10.153 as follows: Kaya Karanayosh Cha Purva Paya Vipayayo Vidyayati Shayok Shayokti Shyatsa. A statement in which the logical order of a cause and its effect is reversed should be understood as Ati Shayokti, emphasis by extreme assertion. Srila Jiva Goswami cites the following commentary on this statement. Karanashya Shigra Karitam Vaktum Kayasya Puravam Ukto. To express the swift action of a cause, one may assert the result before the cause. In this connection, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti points out that the merciful association of the Lord's devotees makes possible our determination to become Krishna conscious. And the Acharya agrees with Jiva Goswami that this verse is an instance of Atisha Yokti. Omagyana Timirandusha Ginanjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Panchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, some famous verses here from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Very powerful verses, not that. So the Bhagavatam, as Chiranjeev Prabhu was explaining yesterday very nicely, the Bhagavatam speaks on, you could say, like nivritti and pravritti. It speaks on negative things and positive things. It speaks on vitti and nisheda. Vitti means things that we should be.
This is called Vaidhi. Just like we practice Vaidhi, Sadhana Bhakti. This means rules that we should follow. Right? Viti means things that you should do. And Nisheda means things which you should abstain from or avoid. Things you should not do. Right? So Rupa Goswami, in the Nectar of Devotion, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he explains there are 64 items of bhakti, and certain things you must do, and other things you must avoid, like that. And actually he goes into 64 offences in serving the deity and so forth. 10 offences against the holy name. This is nisheda, this is nivritti. These are things that must be avoided or rejected. And then there is the positive things that must be accepted if one wants to make advancement in spiritual life. So the Bhagavatam discusses both the negative and the positive. And just like when you're giving an example to someone, when you're explaining a point, just like in teaching, when you're teaching someone, then you may give a negative example and then give a positive example to give a contrast so that the student can understand things better. Just like you've seen the Bhagavad Gita, who is the Bhagavad Gita spoken by? Krishna, all right, who is the supreme teacher. He is the Adi Guru. Arjuna gets instructed by Krishna after he surrenders to Krishna. Arjuna says in the second chapter of the Gita, Shishyaste ham shadimam tvam prapanam. Now I am your disciple and a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. Up until that point, when until Arjuna surrenders to Krishna and accepts Krishna as his guru, and Krishna does not instruct him. This is etiquette. This is sadhacharya or spiritual etiquette. You cannot instruct someone who is not willing to listen to you. Have you ever tried to tell someone to do something who doesn't listen to you? Anyone had that experience ever? Once or twice? That happened? So sometimes we may instruct someone, but they don't listen to us. So then what is the point of giving that person instruction? And what was the purpose of giving the person the instruction? If the person is not willing to listen, then we should not instruct the person. We should find someone who is that person will listen to, and then we will ask them to instruct that person. Because if we're trying to instruct the person, but they're not willing to listen to us, then we're just wasting time. Like that. So until Arjuna is willing to listen to Krishna, until he surrenders to him as disciple, then up until that point, Krishna does not instruct Arjuna. He doesn't say anything to Arjuna. He does say a few things in the beginning of the second chapter, but he doesn't open up the instruction of the Bhagavad Gita. He doesn't take the position of guru. But then, as soon as Arjuna says, "Now I am your disciple, I am a soul surrendered to you, please instruct me," when his attitude is correct, then Krishna begins the Bhagavad Gita, begins to instruct, like that. So within the Bhagavad Gita, because Krishna is the Adi Guru, or because Krishna is the supreme teacher, everything that we ever, any instruction that we ever give to someone is simply a repetition of instructions coming from Krishna himself. Therefore, that is called parampara. That is called disciplic succession, right? So each member of the disciplic succession does not become proud of his position in the disciplic succession. He doesn't think that he is prominent, or he is powerful, or he is, how do you say it?
Special.
Yeah. Or, I think there's another word I'm thinking of. He doesn't think that he is, like that. He doesn't think he's a special personality. Rather, he thinks he's simply a connection in the link of the chain of disciplic succession. And he's simply passing on something which is being handed to him by his guru, by the mercy of his guru. Just like the example is given, if you want to get the mango, the best mango, from the top of the tree, then the most effective way is to have many people. If it's a big, huge mango tree, the best way to get it is to have many people situated on the different branches, on different levels, coming down the tree, and the mango is passed very carefully from one person to another. If someone just climbs up the top of the tree and then starts throwing the mangoes to someone on the ground, some of them will arrive safely, but some of them aren't going to arrive safely. Right? Some of them are going to arrive and they'll be intact, but others won't. Right? Others will get damaged along the way or spoiled or like that. So disciplic succession means that each member of the succession must pass on the message without any change or any tampering of the original message. Just like we see in, as Bhakti Prabhu was speaking on Monday, we see within the other spiritual traditions on the earth at this point in time, the disciplic succession is broken down. Right? Just like you see in what we call these days Christianity. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada said it's not Christianity, it's churchianity. Mm-hmm. Because what was Christianity isn't so prominent. What Christ actually taught, and the understanding of what Christ actually taught is not so prominent now. We have some churchianity thing, which is just, you know, people who have misconstrued the original teachings, and they're trying to pass that on in the name of Christ or in the name of religion. So this is the defect of disciplic succession breaking down. The disciplic succession breaks down, and then what happens? The message becomes lost and loses its potency, it loses its purity, and then it doesn't have the same effect on the hearts of people. But if the succession is kept very pure and very intact, then everything is passed on perfectly and the message comes to everyone, even in the modern age, in a very perfect and pure form, without adulteration. Prabhupada calls Bhagavad Gita as it is, you know, not as it was. You know, not Bhagavad Gita as Krishna spoke of 5,000 years ago, but yeah, we've added a few extra things in there. Right? Or the Bhagavad Gita as you like it. Right. Or the Bhagavad Gita as you desire to speculate. Or the Bhagavad Gita any way you want it. Or Krishna meets Lassie. Or, and then everything just becomes speculation. Yeah, and then you just speak whatever you want to speak and say, oh, that's the Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada was so heavy on that point. Do not change it. Right? Prabhupada once said, he said, the problem with you Westerners is that you like to change things all the time. He said, do not change it. Right? Whatever you have received, do not change it. Right? Of course, we can, with intelligence, we can modify things in order to package the preaching in a particular way, like that. But we don't change the essence of the teachings, like that. We don't change the essence of the culture. Like that, these things must remain intact. So, Krishna is the best guru. Krishna is the perfect guru, and he is the original guru. And in the Bhagavad Gita, when he gives examples, then what he'll do is that he'll contrast things. He'll give the negative, and then straight after that he'll give the positive, and then sometimes he gives the negative again straight after that. Right? He'll show you what is a liberated soul. And then, you know, in a couple of verses straight following, then he'll show you what is a conditioned soul. And then straight after that, he goes straight back to what is a liberated soul. Right? This is excellent teaching. This is perfect teaching. And this is the way we should explain things to people. We should give examples using positive demonstration and then negative instructions. And then positive again. So that people can understand this is what you should not do, but this is what you should do. Yeah, it's no use saying to someone, oh, don't do that. And then you don't explain them what the positive thing is. Or how to improve. Like that. Or you tell them how to improve, but then you don't explain them properly what the things are that should be avoided. You know, you need to know both things. So, as Chiranjeev Prabhu was pointing out yesterday, very nicely, he gave a very pessimistic class about the material world, right? Prabhupada said this is healthy pessimism. There's such a thing as healthy pessimism. A devotee should be... there's two words. One is optimism or optimistic, and one is pessimistic. Optimistic means you're very positive about life. You're very positive in your outlook on things. And pessimistic means you have a very negative view. Right? You'll see, you meet people sometimes and they're pessimistic. Right? Just like you'll say, oh, it's a nice day, isn't it? And they say, no, it's not. You know, or you say something, you say a pleasant comment, and then they're just like, you know, they always find the negative. That's pessimism, right? And optimism is someone who's always optimistic. Right? Sometimes you meet people who are just optimistic. Doesn't matter what's going on. You know, the whole world could be crashing and, you know, there's things, you know, the world's falling apart. And they're like, yeah, but at least the sun's shining. You know, at least the weather's nice. Like that. So optimism and pessimism are there. And Prabhupada points out there is healthy pessimism. Devotee can have healthy pessimism. We should be pessimistic about the material world. Right? Why should we be pessimistic about the material world? Why is it good to be pessimistic about the material world?
Otherwise we become overly attached.
Yeah, because otherwise we become overly attached to this material world. We should be detached from the material world. Right? So if you heard Chiranjeev Prabhu's class yesterday, and as the Bhagavatam was saying, the Bhagavatam explained in the verse that he spoke on yesterday, that even a king, right, someone who's like a very exalted person, like in this world, say like Queen Elizabeth or Prince Charles or someone like that, some very prominent person, some very royal person, it says in the Bhagavatam, even a king or a queen, their body is simply going to become ashes or stool or food for worms or food for jackals and vultures. Right? Does that sound very optimistic? You know, when you meet Queen Elizabeth next time, yeah, you can say to her, very nice to meet you, my dear pile of ashes. Yeah? My dear stool for worms. You know, your royal stool for worms. You know, your royal highness, like that. But this is a healthy pessimism, because this is reality. Right? And the Bhagavatam says in the very second verse of the Bhagavatam, right, the very beginning of the Bhagavatam, the second verse says, the Bhagavatam is meant to distinguish reality from illusion. That's the purpose of the Bhagavatam. Right? So the Bhagavatam speaks what appears to be pessimistically about the material world because it's speaking in terms of fact. It's speaking in terms of reality. You know, if the Bhagavatam paints a very wonderful picture for you of the material world, then you want to stay in the material world. Just like if you read the Vedas, you know, the Bhagavatam is the essence of the Vedas. The Bhagavatam is the transcendental portion of the Vedas. But Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Nishtraigunyo Bhavajuna. He says most of the Vedas deals with the three modes of material nature. So if you read the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas, and out of all of the Vedic, what we call the Vedas, the four Vedas, the Atava, Yajur, Rig, Samaveda, all the Vedic literatures, 96% of the Vedic literatures is the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas. And what does the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas, what does it direct you towards? What does it encourage you to do?
Obtain some fruitive results.
Fruitive, right. And what's the highest fruitive result that you can get in the material world? What's the highest thing you can get in the material world?
Heavenly planets?
Yeah, the heavenly planets. Swarga. Right? If you read the Karmakanda section of the Vedas, it's all about going to Swarga. Go to the heavenly planets. Right? Don't try to enjoy in the material in earth. Right? Mrityuloka. There's no enjoyment here. Right? If you want to enjoy, go to the heavenly planets. That's when enjoyment begins. Right? There's no enjoyment on earth. You think we're having a good time here. Nothing comparable to what's going on in the heavenly planets. Nothing comparable. Right? People are so much more beautiful there. Right? No one gets old. There's no disease. Right? Every piece of fruit is ripe. There's no such thing as rotten food or rotten fruit, or, you know, everything is ripe, everything is succulent, everything is juicy. It's like the weather is perfect. Right? They don't have rain or cloudy days, you know. I mean, it's like, it is swaga. It is heaven. Right? It is perfection of material existence. But the Bhagavatam says it is illusion. Right? It is reality distinguished from illusion. Right? There's nothing in it which will give the soul happiness or satisfaction. Right? So this is the Bhagavatam speaking like this. Very. So it says that a king simply becomes stool. That's reality. Right? His body is simply going to become ashes. When Prabhupada was dying in 1977, and Prabhupada spent nearly all of the last 6 months of his life, he spent in his room in Vrindavan, or he spent in Vrindavan with Krishna Balaram Mandir. Prabhupada's body became very emaciated, very weak, right? And Prabhupada, it was very evident that he was about to leave this world. And Prabhupada said to his disciples, do not think that this will not happen to you. Don't think that you won't die. Don't think that your body is also going to become ashes. All of our bodies are just going to be ashes. You know, some of the devotees sitting here now, we're going to be at each other's funeral ceremonies in a few decades' time. Right? And we're going to see these devotees, right? Our body's going to be burnt to ashes and placed in the Ganges of the Jamuna. That's reality. Right? So that's healthy pessimism. Right? The material world is not a place where you are going to live. You're not going to live forever. Right? Fact number one. And you cannot be permanently happy here. Right? So don't get illusioned and think this is the all in all, the end all be all, because it's not. And that's what the Bhagavatam says. And the Bhagavatam gives these very negative descriptions in order to detach us from the material world. Right? And you have to hear those kind of instructions. If you just hear all positive things all the time, right, then you may not become detached sufficiently from the material world, from the material energy, like that. So then, that was yesterday's verse. And then today's verse, very famous verse, says that having conquered the entire circle of directions and being thus free of conflict, a man sits on a splendid throne receiving praise from leaders who were once his equals. But when he enters the women's chambers where sex pleasure is found, he is led about like a pet animal, O Lord. Famous verse from the Bhagavad Gita. That it means that someone who has conquered the entire earth, right, every direction, the chakra. Chakra means 360 degrees. Right, everywhere you look. Right, just like you go on top of your palace, if you're the king, you go on top of the palace and you look in every direction, it's all yours. You are the emperor of the earth. Yet, when you go into the inner chambers of your wives, right, and it describes in other verses in the Bhagavad Gita, that person who has conquered all the men on earth, right, who is the most powerful man on earth, right? No other man on earth can defeat him. When he goes into his wife's inner chambers and she simply lifts one of her eyebrows, he falls on his back, right, and she puts her foot on his chest and he is conquered. Just like that. Right? So that is the power of sex attraction. It is called, within the Bhagavad Gita, Maituni Bhav. Maituni Bhav means sexual energy. This is how Maya keeps everyone in the material world, through sexual energy. Write that. Pumsa Striya Maituni Bhavam Etam. Right? Bhagavad Gita says in the second canto. Or the third canto. In the third canto, I think. Then the Bhagavad Gita says, this Maituni Bhav, or the fifth canto. I can't remember which, where it comes from. It says that the energy between Pumsa Striya, between men and women, the Maituni Bhav means that sexual attraction, right? Hridaya Grantim Ahu. Hridaya Grantim means it makes a tight knot within the heart which binds you to this material energy. We are kept in the material world by attraction to the opposite sex. That is how we are kept in this material world, by that attraction, right? And it is very difficult to conquer, right? And the Bhagavad Gita says, from that attraction comes the misconception of aham mameti. Aham mameti means I and mine. Right? Because everyone, the material disease is I am a man, or I am a woman, right? And then mine. Right? And then it expands. Right? Bhagavad Gita says, kalatra. That's it. No, that's it. Deha pacha kalatra dishu atmasanyesh vasat swapi. Bhagavatam says, deha, from your body, deha atma kalatra adishu. Kalatra means, first of all you have the body, and then from body, from thinking I am man or I am woman, then comes kalatra. Kalatra means the wife. Right? Or for the Matajis it means the husband, like that. So then we become bound up by that attraction to the opposite sex. We feel like, if I do not have a woman, if I am a man, I do not have a woman in this material world, or if I am a woman, I do not have a man, then I cannot exist. Right? I, and then mine. Right? My husband, my wife, like that. And then the attachment is very, pridayagranti means the knot becomes very tight. That's what keeps us in the material world. And then adishu, palatra adishu, right? Adishu means those things that expand from the combination of husband and wife, right? And what expands from the combination of husband and wife?
Children.
First of all, children. Children, and then?
House.
Yeah, and then paraphernalia. Unlimited paraphernalia, right? It doesn't stop, isn't it? My dear Prabhu?
Yes, Prabhu, yes.
Who has just had his first child?
Yes. Right?
Is it expanding?
Exactly.
This is realization.
Big time.
How much?
Big time.
Big time. This is realization. This is realization in Bhagavatam class. This is not jnana. Bhagavatam class is not jnana. It is big jnana. It is realization. Right? It is confirmed. Right? Why is it confirmed? Because that's the nature of the material world. Right? Krishna says it in the Bhagavad Gita. Sorry, Krishna said, or it is said in the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita, right? It's said in the Bhagavatam, this is what the material world does, like that. From this maituni bar, or this attraction to the opposite sex, then unlimited expansion takes place, and you are entangled in the material world. And then you have to break out, right? And it's very difficult to become liberated from that situation. So therefore, what is the answer? What do we do? Right? Do we just surrender to Maya? Do we just put our hands up in the air and say, I surrender? You know, just wave a white flag, you know, and say, just do whatever you want because I can't fight with you. You know, you're way too powerful for me. No. Krishna says, regulate your sense gratification. Right? This is Krishna's teaching within the Bhagavatam, within the Gita. Regulate your sense gratification. Take shelter of Ashraya. Ashraya means shelter, right? So therefore enter the Grihastha Ashrama, right? Okay, you cannot overcome because you're not powerful enough to overcome the attraction to the opposite sex. So get married and then overcome it gradually by taking shelter of the Grihastha Ashrama, right? When we say Grihastha Ashrama means the ashram means a place of shelter. Your ashram, or your home, if you're a grihastha, it should be a place of shelter. It should be a place where the Supreme Personality of Godhead is worshipped and is central within that ashram. That's what an ashram means. Right? And that is the difference between griha medhi and griha ashram. Right? Because if you go to a griha medhi's house, there's no Supreme Personality of Godhead present. Right? And because the Lord is not present, He is not central in the ashram. What is the centre of the consciousness? The medhi, or the centre of the consciousness? It's just the griha. It's just the wife, the children, the husband, right? And all the paraphernalia. Right? But one must make the grihastha ashram a place of shelter. It should be a place where you are gradually becoming uplifted, and you should feel yourself becoming gradually detached from your attachment to the opposite sex. And that's why we get married. Right? Because then you learn, because when you're not married, what happens? What's that?
You want to be married, you desire more.
Yeah, you want to be married. Why is that?
Because
yeah, because you haven't got it. Like that. What were you going to say?
It's just because the brain fills all this, you know, dreams up.
Very good.
Very
good, yeah. So it's what is called in the Shastra, Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur says, it is flowers in the sky. Right? It's like a dream, or Prabhupada says a phantasmagoria. It means a cloud where flowers are growing out of the cloud in the sky. Right? Have you ever seen such a thing?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't exist. But that's what it's like when you're not married and you're thinking about getting married. Right? You think, oh, it's going to be like flowers in the sky. You know, I'm just going to float off on rose petals and doves and, you know, beautiful things. There's going to be harps playing, and, you know, and I'll have my perfect partner, and I'm perfect, so he'll have me, right? Right? And then we'll just live forever, happily ever after. Just like in the movies. That's what we always see in the movies. Then the hero rescues the maiden, and then they ride off into the sunset. What do you think happens after the film finishes? Right? What do you think happens? They ride off into the sunset, right? Now where are they riding to for a start? Right? They're riding out to the middle of the desert. Right? And when they get out there, right, it's 12 o'clock at night, right? There's coyotes and jackals howling. Right? There's no food, there's no water, there's nowhere to sleep. Right? She hits him and she says, "Why in the hell did you bring me here for?" And he says to her, "If you hit me one more time, I'm gonna leave you here." Right? That's what actually happens. Right? You just see the way the film finishes.
Director's cut.
Yeah, the director's cut. You don't get the reality. Yeah, because the reality is too harsh. You just want to get the flowers in the sky. You just want the phantasmagoria. Right? That's not what happens. Okay, what's the greatest love story in the West? What's the greatest love story of all time? Romeo and Juliet, Shakespeare. You could say Cleopatra and Antony, you could say, but yeah, Romeo and Juliet, modern times, Shakespeare. Right. So what happened? They died for each other. They loved each other so much, right? And they could not marry. And then finally, Romeo comes running, and Juliet had poisoned herself, right? So then he poisoned himself. But actually, she hadn't poisoned herself. And she woke up, and he was poisoned and dead, so then she poisoned herself. Right, and that's the greatest love story of all time. So much love they had for each other. Right? So then what we do, we just take it back 5 minutes. Right? Romeo runs in. Right? He wakes up Juliet and she wakes up. Right? She wasn't dead. He thought she was dead, but she wasn't. He didn't drink the poison. She didn't drink the poison. They lived happily ever after. So what happened? They're Italian, right? So they got married. They had 9 kids. Right? She got a moustache, right? As she got older, right? And she expanded, right? And she was a big mama, like that. And then he got sick of her, you know, like giving him hell every time he came home with the 9 kids. So he went off and had an affair. And then one of her brothers killed him. Right? Yeah, that's probably more likely what was going to happen. You know, so the whole love story of the material world, the attraction between the opposite sexes, is an illusion. It is an illusion. And the reason you get married is because you realise when you live with the person, right, you, in your mind you think, you know, I just need a husband, I just need a wife, I just need a husband, I just need a wife. If you're thinking like that, you're probably pretty crazy. Right? You shouldn't be thinking like that. You should be thinking, I need a husband or a wife. But if you're thinking, right? I need a husband, I need a husband, I need a husband, I need a wife, I need a wife, I need a wife. And then finally you get one, right? You realise, because we are conditioned souls, right, it's not that great, right? And I can say this because my wife's in Canada. Right? And I hope you're not going to listen to this. And if you do, I'm very sorry. Like, this is just philosophy. I'm just joking. It's like, yeah, so the point is, but it's reality. That's reality. She married me, right? And I'm a conditioned soul, so I have a lot of defects, right? And because I have a lot of defects, right? She's married me, and now she's learning from that marriage, right? That this attraction between the opposite sexes is not actually that great. It's not actually that wonderful. Right? So that's why Krishna says, if you have this attraction, regulate it and purify yourself. Right? And gradually elevate yourself out of this attraction. Right? That is Krishna's formula. But the point is, Prabhupada says, in Grihastha Ashram, you must put Krishna in the center. Right? You will only become detached from your maituni bhav, or your sexual, the attraction between the sexes, between male and female. You'll only liberate yourself from that attraction if you put Krishna in the center of your life. Right? That is Grihastha Ashram. Right? Wife is there and husband in there, but they cooperate together, right, and they assist each other in going towards Krishna and serving Krishna. That is how to. So the Bhagavatam gives these negative things. It gives these negative examples for us in order to give us a pessimistic attitude about the material world, but then it gives us very positive alternatives. Right? It doesn't just stick on the negative all the time. So then in this verse, in the 53rd verse, then actually in the 52nd verse, the 52nd verse is very nice also. In the 52nd verse, it says, "A king who desires even greater power than he already has strictly performs his duties, carefully practicing austerity and forgoing sense enjoyment. But he whose urges are so rampant, thinking I am independent and supreme, cannot attain happiness." So this is very nice. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Raghunath Das Goswami asked Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for instructions on how to live in the renounced order of life, because he was a renunciant, he was a Vairagi, Raghunath Das Goswami. So he said to Mahaprabhu, he said, "Please give me instructions how I should live as a renunciant." And the instructions that Lord Chaitanya gave are applicable both for grihasthas and for renunciants. Because, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, he gave the term grihastha brahmacharis. Right? Even if you're a grihastha, factually you're still a brahmachari. Your sex life is only for procreation of children. Right? And if you're not having children, or if you've had children, then you're practicing celibacy. You're practically a brahmachari or a brahmacharini. Right? So therefore, these instructions which Lord Chaitanya gave to Raghunath Das Goswami are very pertinent. So Lord Chaitanya said to Raghunath Das Goswami, one of the instructions he gave him, he said, "A person who is addicted to his tongue, his belly, and his genitals, and is controlled by them, and is always running after their urges, the urges of these three," he said, "he will never attain Krishna." Right? Mahaprabhu says, "You'll never attain Krishna. If you don't get control of your tongue, your belly, and your genitals, you will never attain Krishna." So this, you can only get control of your tongue, your belly, and genitals by becoming very Krishna conscious. Right? You have to become very attracted to Krishna, very attached to Krishna. Just like sometimes Prabhupada's disciples, when Prabhupada was on the planet, his disciples were generally very young. Generally they're in their 20s or going into their 30s. They're generally very young. And when you're in your 20s and even when you're in your 30s, sex desire is very strong. As you get older, it gradually decreases just by the age of the body to a certain degree. But when you're very young, sex desire is very strong, very powerful within the young body. So sometimes they would ask Prabhupada about controlling their sex desire, about controlling their urges and so forth. And Prabhupada would write letters to them and he would say, "Public enemy number one, Mr. Lust." Right, this is the big problem in the material world. People are attached to lust, right? Attached to uncontrolled sex life, like that. So Prabhupada would write letters and he would give instructions on how to control this sex desire. And in some of Prabhupada's letters, Prabhupada says that madan, who do we call madan in the English language? In Sanskrit we call madan. Cupid. Yeah, so we have Cupid, right? So Cupid fires arrows. Madan. You heard of Madan? Cupid? Kamadev, yeah. Or they call him Kamadev. Like that, Kamadev. Or Madan. Like that. Or Cupid. Like that. So he fires arrows into the young boys and young girls. Or into the old boys and old girls. Fires arrows. Like that. And the arrows go in, and suddenly lust comes out. Right? One feels very attracted to the opposite sex. Right? This is Cupid, this is due to Madan. So, one of Krishna's names is Madan Mohan. Right? Mohan means he bewilders Cupid. Right? So Cupid cannot touch you if you are attracted to Krishna. If you are too attracted to Krishna, you can't be attracted to the opposite sex. Because you'll see the opposite sex just as a bag of stool. Right? Which is reality. That's reality. That's what the opposite sex is. It is just a material form that we're attracted to. Just like Kundali Prabhu gave a nice example many years ago. He said that from a vertical point of view, or from a vertical perspective, then the material body looks very attractive. Just like if you see a very beautiful girl, or if you see a very handsome man, then you will think, oh, you know, looking up and down, right, vertical, if you're looking up there, you think, oh, they're very attractive. But then he said, look at them horizontally, which means you cut the body, right, and then you go like that and you give everyone a good look. Right? From a different perspective, right? If you're looking at the body from a different perspective, then it's very, then you put it back and you say, okay, it was nice to meet you, but you lose your attraction, right? So this is the reality, this is what we're attracted to, right? So Prabhupada says that if you want to become attracted to or lose your attraction to the material energy, to the opposite sex, ultimately you have to become attracted to Krishna. He is Madan Mohan, right? He bewilders even Cupid. So there was one story that's told in Vrindavan that Cupid, or Madan, he approached Narad Muni. And when he came to Narad Muni, because Narad Muni is famous as being a great brahmachari. Right? Narad Muni is like a very powerful brahmachari. Like that. So Madan thought, Cupid thought, if I bewilder him, then I'll become very famous, very powerful, that even I could even affect Narad Muni. So he snuck up to Narad Muni with his bow and arrows and was ready to shoot Narad Muni. Narad Muni looked at him and Narada said, Cupid, what are you doing? And he said, I'm going to shoot you. And he said, what are you going to do that for? And he said, because if I shoot you and I bewilder you, I'll become very famous as being very powerful, as Kamadev, as the god of lust. And Narad said, don't waste your time. He said, I'm very easy to affect. He said, I'm not very advanced. He said, if you shoot me, it'll be very easy to affect me. He said, if you really want to become famous, you know who you should shoot? Right? And then and Madan said, who shall I shoot? He said, go and shoot Krishna. He said, he's very powerful. He said, if you can affect him, you'll become really famous. So then he was in Vrindavan, he was sneaking around in the forest looking for Krishna. Right? And then Krishna was in the forest. And then he came around the corner and he saw Krishna. He was just about to shoot him. When he saw Krishna, Krishna is so beautiful, right? Because Krishna is Shama Sundara. He's the most beautiful person, right? There's no one more beautiful. As soon as he saw Krishna, he dropped the bow and arrow. Right? And he just went, oh my God. Right? And then he realized he had no potency. Lust, material lust, has no potency in front of Krishna. Right? Material lust just completely becomes useless in front of Krishna. So this is how to conquer material lust. Krishna is so much in your consciousness, there's no room for lust like that. So this is actually how to conquer. So the Bhagavad Gita gives us both sides. It gives us the negative things, right? It gives us the description of the material world to help us become detached from the material world. But then it gives us the positive description of Krishna, right? And becoming attracted to Krishna through bhakti. And this is how to actually conquer these material desires. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed.
Srimati Radhan is called Madan Mohan Mohini. What do you expect, right?
Because Krishna conquers Cupid, but Radharani conquers Krishna. Just like this one pastime where Radharani and the gopis, because Krishna is very strong, Krishna is very powerful. And the gopis and Radharani, they said to Krishna, you're not so strong. You know, you're not so powerful like that. And Krishna said, I'm very strong. I'm very powerful. And they said, you're very famous for wrestling. Right? Krishna's a very good wrestler like that. And said, Radharani could easily defeat you in wrestling. So then they organized a wrestling match. Right? And they said, okay, tomorrow we'll meet at this place. And Krishna will come and Radharani will come and they will wrestle and then we'll see who is the strongest. Right? So then the next day, Krishna dressed up as a wrestler, you know, dressed up in all his clothes like as a wrestler, ready to wrestle. And the gopis dressed Radharani up as a wrestler. Right? And then when Radharani walked in and Krishna saw Radharani, he fainted. And that was it, that was it. That was the end of the match. So Krishna is called, Radharani is called Madan Mohan Mohini. Right? She's more powerful than Krishna. She has Krishna under control. Like that, so. Any other questions or comments?
In Krishna Bhagavatam, we hear a lot of us that women have a kind of different lust that men have. So, women have different desires as well.
So, when it says that women are 9 times lustier than men, then the definition of lust is more broad in that perspective or in that explanation like that. So, generally, not always, but generally, men are more attached to gross sex life, the actual act of sex. Men are more attached than women are, generally, to that. But when the Bhagavad Gita says that women are more lusty, it means, on the subtle level, means needing the subtle sex, like, you know, all the affection and all the, you know, Prabhupada says the bangles, the babies and the saris. Prabhupada says like that. He says, you know, you have to give bangles and babies and saris, right? That's subtle sex. Because the women wants all this, it's subtle material enjoyment. Right? It's not nothing to do with the soul. It's not spiritual enjoyment. It's subtle sex life. It's subtle. The woman wants to enjoy the man through all the facilities. She'll get babies, right? She'll get saris, she'll get bangles, she'll get nice things like that. So that's what she's more attached to. So in that respect, the Bhagavad Gita is saying like that, the woman is more lusty than a man, generally. Not always, but generally. Right? We'll see the women are generally more attached to material facility and comfort than the man. Right? Because if you're then the second part of your question was about, you know, the women wanting affection and all that, all those kind of things. That was the second part that you asked, right? So that is natural, and that should not be how do you say that? Should not be
misunderstood.
Well, that should not be restricted, right? It is natural for the woman to want that kind of protection and affection because that's her nature, right? So the woman should not try to artificially try to go beyond that, unless she is like that by realization, which is rare like that. So therefore, in Vedic culture, the woman is always protected by the father when she's a young girl. And then the father gives her to the husband, and she's protected by him. And then later in life, if he becomes renounced or if he passes on, then she's given to the son to be protected by. So she always needs that affection. That's not wrong. That's her nature, she needs that, right? That. But gradually as life goes on, she should become more attached to Krishna. Gradually as life goes on. It doesn't mean she renounces those things. Oh, you know, the material world's false, so no. It's like for a man and a woman, we both have attachments. So we get married, we fulfill our material desires, but simultaneously, while we're doing that, we should be becoming more attached to Krishna in due course of time. There are some Madhijis who don't need the bangles and the saris. Like you said, you don't need the man to get the bangles and the saris. But you'll see those who are not attached to the man, they're also not attached to the bangles and the saris. Right? Like Prashanta Madhiji. There's one Madhiji, if you go to Vrindavan, Prashanta Madhiji. She's a very advanced devotee in our movement, disciple of Lokanath Swami. So she's not married, and she's not going to get married. Right? She's like a Brahmacharini, like that. She wears white. She doesn't wear bangles, she doesn't wear colourful saris, right? She doesn't desire, because she's advanced. But for most of us, we're conditioned and we're attached, so we should fulfil those attachments in a regulated way.
So the enjoyment we get through saris, bangles and children is the same enjoyment we get through getting the attention of a man,
It's material attachment. You know, why do you need to wear bangles? Right? Because you're attached. Why do you need to wear nice, you know, silk and saris? Because you're like, I buy my wife silk saris. I buy her nice saris, right? Because I want her to feel comforted. I want her to feel like she's loved and comforted. So I buy her nice things. I buy her gold bag. I buy her gold earrings. She has nice things like that. But the soul doesn't need these things. You know, we're not detached yet. We're not on that level. But gradually we have to come to that level where we are detached from these material things. But until we come to that level, then we have to fulfill our material needs and gradually rise to a platform where we don't need those things. And we should be balanced. Like, as grihasthas, we shouldn't have, you know, the wife doesn't need 40 saris. That's probably too many. Right? So she should have, like, saris. By my wife, you know, many nice saris. She has many saris. Nice. But, you know, if she has, like, 50 or 60, then I'll probably say, you know, Veda Priya, I think that's probably going a little too far now. You know, maybe we can cut back a little bit here, like that. Or, you know, buy a nice gold bangles and gold earrings. But, you know, not like, you know, 10 pairs of earrings, you know, and all different, you know, different bangle for each sari. And, you know, that's when it starts getting too much. So we should fulfill our material desires, but in a very balanced way, because we are devotees, and our spirit is vairagya. Our spirit is detachment. That's what we're aiming at. Like that. So, does that answer what you want?
Yeah, absolutely. Last question. So if we have this desires, and we know at that stage, like you said, we should control this desires, so what's the best way to control that desire at that stage?
Then you just have to surrender to Krishna. What can you do? Because, you know, I know as brahmacharis and brahmacharinis, you see it many times. Because we're devotees, right? There's only a few of us in the world. You know, there's only hundreds of us in the world. There's not thousands and millions of us in the world. There's only hundreds of us. So then, the non-devotees, if they want to get married, even they have a hard time. They have a hard time finding someone. It's even harder for devotees because we've got less people to choose from. Right? So we haven't got so many options. So sometimes you see the devotees, they want, the girls and the boys, the brahmacharis and brahmacharis, they want to get married. But it doesn't mean it's going to happen immediately. So you have to be patient. Like that. And what do? Then you surrender to Krishna. And you try to go through it and not let your mind affect you too much. Because your mind gives you a hard time sometimes. You know, I want to get married tomorrow. Yeah, and Krishna, how come you didn't send me a husband? Yeah, I want tomorrow, like that. Yeah, I'm not going to do my. No, you don't do like that. You get up and do your service, right? And okay, it is difficult, but you know that's life. You know, don't think you get married and then all changes. Yeah, you get married and you get a whole bunch of other problems, right? Like before you're married, this is what happens, right? Before you get married. You think, you know, you wake up in the morning and say, Krishna, you know, you haven't given me a husband. Yeah, I don't want to serve you today. You know, like that. And then you get married. And then you wake up in the morning and say, you know, Krishna, you gave me this husband. I don't want to serve you today. It's the same thing. So the point is, the spirit of the devotee is detachment. That's the spirit of the devotee. There has to be detachment in the mood. Because if you become too attached, then your devotional service becomes weak. Does that answer?
Okay. Would you often need to say we should develop an attraction for Krishna to get detached from material desires? So how to develop that attraction for Krishna? Just because I was that day when I was there for the last seminar with Yama Swami Maharaj, he said, you know, it's not easy to approach Krishna. And because he's very serious, you know. And we should try to approach it in a more but you know, how to open only develop an attraction and love.
Yeah, so we invoke, you become attached to someone by serving them. That's how you become attached to someone, right? You do service to the person, that's how you become attached to them, like that. So that's what bhakti yoga means, it means devotional service. So everything we do for Krishna or for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by all those activities that we do, that's what increases our attachment to them. Right? So what is bhakti yoga? What are the items of bhakti yoga? Rupa Goswami says 64. Right? So what does that mean? Right? And then he says there's five most important. Right? So what are the five most important? Right? You chant Hare Krishna. You hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. You associate with the Vaishnavas. Right? You go to the holy places. And you worship the deities of Krishna. So if you do those five things, if you concentrate your life on those five services, those five activities, then Rupa Goswami says, even a neophyte will feel ecstasy, right, manifesting Even a neophyte, someone who's not very advanced, will feel very blissful just by doing those five devotional activities. He says even one of them is so powerful. Any other question or comment?
And one more thing, like, you know, usually I stop going to the city, you know, but I still feel that, you know, some frustration, and I used to go there and see the woman and get that. And like, after many days, I went yesterday, and you know, somebody told me I should just finish your rounds in the morning first, so that you'll be like, you know, I still have to finish it, but most of the rounds in the morning, because I was getting distracted, you know. So, I'm just not getting what to do, so I just put my hands on the knee back and start chanting. But I'm not able to focus that up, so can you just see what to do?
What to do about what?
Like, you know, just doesn't get distracted in one sense.
Distracted in what?
When I'm distracted in that, you know, my woman.
How do you not get distracted by women? Understand that you're the soul. That's how you don't get distracted by women.
Because nowadays when I like see this, you know, like we were at one of the following with another friend, and we saw many of the, you know, half-day movies, we're just getting frustrated now. But we can't avoid it now, it just comes as a day.
You saw many half-naked women?
Yeah.
Where?
In the parliament, you know, when we went for it.
Yeah, so don't go to those places. What are you doing at the parliament?
He had some visa immigration checkers down for the world government.
Okay, so then that's the material world, so it's a very... Prabhupada said, what do you do? Go to the forest? That's what Prabhupada said. Harikesh Prabhu, who was Prabhupada's brahmachari cook, when Prabhupada, at one point in time, Harikesh Prabhu was cooking for Prabhupada. And while he was cooking for Prabhupada every day, he was cooking his lunch, and all the Mataji's would come into the kitchen and do things in the kitchen while he was cooking Prabhupada's lunch. So he said to Prabhupada, I don't want any Mataji's in the kitchen while I'm cooking your lunch. And then Prabhupada said, then go to the forest. So what are you going to do? You know, International Society for No Women. Right? In 1974, when Prabhupada was on the planet, some of the men, the sannyasis, tried to kick all the women out of ISKCON. That's what they tried to do. And Prabhupada would not let that happen. He said, I cannot. He said, they are my daughters. Right, now they're Prabhupada's granddaughters. You know, all the Mataji's here are Prabhupada's granddaughters. Right, so this is their home. Right, so you have to learn to control your senses. You have to learn to control your mind. You have to learn to become Krishna conscious. You have to learn that you're not the body. And you have to become more attracted to Krishna. That's what we're talking about. It's the same for everyone. I have sex desire. Right, all the men here have sex desire. All the women here have sex desire. There's only one person sitting in the temple who doesn't have sex desire. It's only Prabhupada, he's the only one who doesn't have any sex desire. And then if you look to the left, right, none of them have sex desire either. Right? They're the only ones. Everyone else has it. But the point is, you have to practice devotional service. And when you practice devotional service, you should feel it decreasing. You should feel it. Prabhupada actually says in the Krishna book, he says that is the test of if you are becoming Krishna conscious. You should feel the material desires going down and your attraction to Krishna going up. And sometimes, as a devotee, sometimes you feel it's the opposite. So if it's like that, then Prabhupada says then you have to concentrate on your japa. And concentrate on your devotional service. It means you're not performing your devotional service properly. Because if you're doing it properly, it should be going the other way.
So when you said ladies are attracted to bangles, babies, it's more non-devotees because they want to be appreciated. If they buy $2,000 sari, everybody will upgrade it by $2,000.
I think some of the devoted women are in that category also. If you ask them, I think there might be some of them, not all of them. I think some of them you'll see are in the, not all of them, but some of them you'll see are in that category also. We're not transcendental yet. We haven't become transcendental to material desires. So Prabhupada said, he said that the women are, they desire babies, saris and bangles like that. I mean, that's their nature to want those things, but they have to control it to a certain degree, and the men have to also control it to a certain degree as well. So, okay, so we'll stop here. Shall we Prabhupada ki?
Yeah.